When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Pitch. Swing and a long drive, deep left, way back,
gone! All right, welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is Dylan White, a man who should be celebrated, not only for his robot, but also for your performance in fantasy this season, Dylan. I'm going to keep on saying it, man. You've had a hell of a year, so keep on going. How's it going, man? How you doing?
Not bad. It's a heat wave up here in Toronto. I'm sure it's also hot down your way, too. So yeah. I'm in the basement right now trying to. I have AC, but it's a bit noisy for the podcast. I'm down in the basement where it's a bit cooler and quieter to give the listeners the best audio experience I can.
Yeah, absolutely. So we talked about it last week, but how are... Still, where are you sitting now in the tout rankings, and how have you performed in the team that you're co-managing in the main event?
Tout, I dropped out of first yesterday. I've come on hard times. Matt Chapman, Danny Jansen on the IL. Maybe Otani will go on the IL. Kershaw's velo's down, so it's a bit of a struggle. But it's me and Andy Behrens right now kind of duking it out at the top. My projections have us like essentially tied for the end of the season. So we'll see how that goes. I'll have to stay on top of it. The main event overall team is clinging to first right now. We're barely ahead. We lost Jojo Romero. We also have Lane Thomas with back tightness. So, you know, it's all, everything's magnified at this time of year. So it's a bit anxiety provoking, but we're currently in first. So it's been a successful year, whether we win or not. So
good stuff. Yeah. I mean, like tremendous performances, and this is what it's all about. You're in the mix at the end, you know, these aren't pushover leagues. You're playing with legends in both situations, frankly. So, you know, you're going to cement yourself. Positive affirmations here, but you're gonna cement yourself as one of those legends by the end of this September is my prediction. So let's jump into it a little bit. We got Mason Miller. He's actually returning today on Wednesday as we're recording this. Was just activated off the injured list. I think he's going to be limited to 45 to 50 pitches. So, you know, not a ton of fantasy value. I think if you're in maybe a deeper Roto League, I can see an argument for the ratios he could provide in some of these short stints, as well as strikeout potential. He's not going to, you know, pitch long enough to qualify for wins, unfortunately, unless he's piggyback, which I don't think is happening, but maybe. So, you know, it's it could be a situation where maybe he sneaks into a W or something like that. But I think overall, you got to view him as maybe like a high-end multi-inning reliever, the way that years ago, like Chris Davinsky, when he was in his heyday with the Astros was, or like Dylan Betances, or like, you know, Hader or some of these guys before they were in full-time closer roles. Just from the fact that he could boost your ratios quite a bit, and he's going to get some strikeouts. So were you saying he is going to be piggybacked?
I think Mark Kotze was saying to, you know, Saris that he will be a multi-inning reliever, so he will be a follower. Okay. So he may, if he's limited to 50 innings, he may get those like vulture wins.
Or 50 pitches, I would say.
Yeah. But what did I say?
You said innings, but no.
50 pitches per outing. So he may get those wins. He may come in, you know, the third inning and pitch to the sixth or something, and then
okay,
if he does as well as the projections say, which is like mid threes ERA, we saw what he did in his brief stint. Like he may get some wins for an Oakland team that's no longer worse than the league. They're ahead of the Royals. So I actually have him in a couple of leagues. I have him, I think, TGFBI. Same. I have him in an OC. And I may roll with him next week, depending on what the other pitchers I have in their matchups are. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I obviously I'm hoping he's going to be healthy. I want to see him be healthy going into 2024. I'm very curious to see how he goes, how high he goes in drafts. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm glad he's back because I was worried it's going to be TJ for him.
Yeah, well, so far so good. That's me knocking on some wood. We'll go there. So we talked a little bit about that, what the expectations are. That's interesting information to hear from Kotze. I had missed that. But let's talk a little bit about some promotions. We saw promotions by Kyle Teal and Roman Anthony up to AA Portland. That's going to be really interesting. I'm going to try to get up there next week and see both of them for a couple of games at least. And I think that sets up for a really interesting potential super team to start 2024 with Marcelo Meyer, Kyle Teal, Roman Anthony, and then others, Blaise Jordan and Wilkerman Garcia, some of these names. A lot of players that have performed in the Red Sox system are kind of there in Portland right now. They're really interesting. So I'm really keeping an eye on this team going into next year. Could be one of the most talented teams coming out of spring training. And kind of credit to both Anthony and Teal. Teal obviously has had less time, but has really performed on both sides of the ball and really shown impact type of ability as an athletic catcher with a high-end hit tool and some power projection. And then we have Roman Anthony, who, you know, underlying data I checked again today as we were able to get some updated numbers. Really good underlying data, right? I mean, like, doesn't miss in zone, doesn't chase. The swing and miss, even when you factor in the higher level at high A where there were some strikeouts, still not that bad. I actually think he's a guy whose strikeout rate is going to improve as he gets a little bit older, as he moves up the levels, as he gets better strike zones. I bet in AAA with the ABS, his strikeout rate would drop by 7%. Like, not even kidding. He's one of those sort of players where I think he's going to get a lot of calls because he is so patient. And the other part of it, too, is he hits the ball hard consistently. You see that in the average exit velocity. You see that in the barrel rate and the sweet spot rate, that sort of thing. You know, making good quality of contact. His high-end quality of contact is excellent. We're talking about, you know, easy plus, maybe double plus in terms of where the 90th percentile sort of fits in for age and level and all that sort of stuff. Roman Anthony, to me, is one of the more interesting prospects going into this offseason, because I do think when all the dust settles, there will be a case that he's a top five prospect. And I don't think that's even crazy. In all of baseball, defense is good. I've gotten really good defensive reports on him in center field recently, you know, on the athleticism, all that sort of stuff. And we know that all the data, everything else, the performance backs it up. Yeah, this might be the Red Sox number one prospect.
That's exciting. I mean, I always viewed Anthony kind of like Jackson Merrill, where the data is really good, but like the results haven't really been like kind of matching that level of underlying data. But now, you know, Anthony is starting to do very well. I took a look at Kyle Teal's data too. Like his contact rate is great. His barrel rate's pretty good. His 90th percentile exit velocity isn't so bad either. Like it is exciting. And that Portland team you're talking about, I think Nick York's there too, right? And Blaise Jordan. So that's quite a team. I don't know how long they'll be together in 2024. I'm sure there'll be quick promotions to AAA, but yeah, that Portland team is very exciting and kind of jealous that you're going to go check them out soon.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You know, hopefully I get both of them in the lineup both times that I head out there. Otherwise, that will be a long drive for nothing. But we'll go from there, you know. So yeah, some interesting players there. Definitely positive stuff in the Red Sox system. Wyatt Langford to AA. He's joining the rush of high-end draftees who have gone to AA. Paul Skeens has gone to AA and then been shut down. Dylan Cruz is up at AA right now. And I think that's it. Is there anybody else that I'm missing that has made the AA jump? Obviously, we said Kyle Teal already.
Not that I can think of offhand.
Well, Nolan Chanuel, of course, but he's in the major leagues. So that's a little bit of a different story. Holiday to AAA is another interesting one. We'll talk about that in a second. But wanted to ask you first, before we get into Holiday, because I think there's a question that I'm gonna pose to you here with Langford that I think applies maybe to Cruz to a degree as well, but I think it's more likely we see Langford break camp. I don't think either of them will break camp, okay? I think that's a bit of a hot take, all right? I think he's going to be back at AA to start next year and could be up in June. But let's say Wyatt Langford gets an invite to Major League Camp. Wyatt Langford crushes. Looks like one of the five or six best hitters in a really good Rangers lineup that has four or five really good hitters already, right? Maybe more. Where are you placing him in where are you placing him in redraft next year? If there is a chance, if he's Jordan Walker's in spring training and he's hanging around and there is a chance this guy breaks camp, we know the Rangers are going all in. They want to win. They want to win that division. They know it's very competitive with Seattle and Houston out there. Every game counts. Langford has a chance of breaking camp. We think it's going to happen. We'll say it's 90% sure. Where are you ranking Wyatt Langford in redraft for next year? How aggressive would you be when you've seen how rookies have performed this year?
Wow. I think I would put Langford kind of where Jordan Walker was going. I think they kind of have similar statistical profiles, like 25 plus home runs with, you know, pretty good speed, offensive potential through the wazoo. I mean, just looking at Langford's underlying data, I think his data is actually better than his results. So projection systems like Steamer or the Bat or whatever that are just running off of what he's doing in double A or high A, maybe underselling what his potential is. So I would have Langford. Where was Walker being drafted? Like a eighth round or something like that? 10th round? I can't remember.
Yeah, maybe. I think it was within the top 100 picks, you know, at the height of it. When I was down there in March doing my labor draft, which was a very unfortunate, I didn't realize it was a massacre at the time, but apparently it was based on my record. Jordan Walker was the hot topic. I mean, he had hit two home runs that day, while me and a lot of other folks, that were from the fantasy industry were in attendance, and, really put in the show and was getting every opportunity. And yeah, I think he was within inside the top 100 picks for sure. And I want to say that he went for maybe like $17 or $18 in that auction, which wasn't cheap, frankly. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know where does, I think Langford, I think you could see him inside the top 100 picks. I think people get caught up in the potential like that for sure. I think I might do it too.
I might too. I mean, Walker has had a pretty good season this year. Like as quiet as it is, and maybe he's being overshadowed by some of the other kind of rookies or whatever, but he's had a solid year, which kind of validates like the selection. And so just like you were saying, how the rookies have been producing this year, like I don't have Corbin Carroll, Gunnar Henderson, all these guys, Jordan Walker on my teams, O'Neill Cruz, I missed out on like some of the guys like Neto and Matt McLain, Ellie De La Cruz in my redrafts. And I'm regretting not having at least one of them. But your Fangraphs is being slow for me coming up. But I want to read out Walker's stats that their selling of Fangraphs is down. It's not happening. Definitely worth picking up, I think. And Langford being on the Rangers with like Corey Seager and Marcus Semien, Nathaniel Lowe, full season of Josh Young, and then even Mitch Garver and Jonah Heim. Like that's an incredible offensive lineup. Adolis Garcia.
Yeah.
Like, arguably even better than the Cardinals where Walker was playing this year. So, yeah, I think he's definitely a pick that even if he doesn't break camp, that he will be up in the season, I believe. And I think definitely someone I'd be targeting. Yeah, so finally, Jordan Walker's numbers have popped up. WRC plus 123. 123 WRC plus. 23% above average, 280 batting average, 345 OBP, 15 home runs, 6 stolen bases, and fewer than 400 plate appearances. So that's, you know, like a 22-10 pace at 600. assuming he plays the whole year. Obviously, the defense is lacking, but that's an argument for Langford there too, because his defense should be better than Jordan Walker in the outfield. So, that's a very interesting question that I hadn't thought of, and now I'm thinking I will take him in redraft next year.
And on to the next question that's in a similar line of thinking, Jackson Holliday, potential player of the year, front runner, I would say, for us right now. I think he has a pretty strong case. I don't think too many folks would probably disagree with me on that one. He's now up in AAA. So now Norfolk, of course, they were in Worcester down the road for me last week. There were, a lot of players I had already seen. It was kind of a week where I was staying home. Had Jackson Holliday been promoted a week earlier, I would have been there every day. I just want to make that statement. I think this guy is trending toward potentially breaking camp with the Orioles next year. He's in AAA already. He's going to finish the season for pretty much a month in AAA. Has conquered every level. He really hasn't slowed down all that much. There's more impact to come with this guy. He's going to get stronger. We talked about this, JJ and I on air today a little bit on the hot air show, the hot podcast. It is a hot air show when it's Josh and I, not with JJ's on, but when it's Josh and I, it is hot air. But that being said, I don't see any reason this guy couldn't potentially break camp next year. He's so polished as a hitter. There's more power to come. He does so many little things well, and he gives them this dynamic leadoff hitter spark plug that's just ready to roll. And I think he's so mature. I sat down with this guy, we had conversations around him a little bit at the All-Star break. And, he comes off like he's a 30-year-old man. He's just very much a professional. Obviously grew up in a baseball family with his father, his uncle, his grandfather. He's been around all of it. Nothing's too big. And I just think he's ready. And I think that the Orioles at a point where, number one, he's going to be cheaper than going out and signing a free agent, provides them an everyday option at shortstop if they look to go that direction, or second base, or wherever they feel he fits in, and, allows them to look forward to the future and maybe allows them to trade some of these additional middle infielders that they have. They have many, for some pitching upgrades, which kind of puts them into that upper echelon. When they perform that way, I think we're still all waiting for him to really kick it into sixth gear and step on the gas and floor it, and, into dynasty super stratosphere of great teams all time. They have the ability to do that, especially with the backbone of players that they have. They have a franchise catcher already. It's Grayson Rodriguez is starting to produce. They've been able to pick up a lot of great arms and produce a great bullpen. It's just a matter of getting that one or two guys. So I feel like that can happen, but got off on a tangent there. But that being said, Jackson Holliday does the same thing. He goes into camp next year, which I'm sure he will, and he rakes. He looks like one of the Orioles' best hitters. Everyone's saying this guy's going to be their leadoff hitter from day one. Where do you draft Jackson Holliday? And I do think this is a format-specific question. I think in your standard 5x5 roto, he is value. I think in OBP of points, this is a guy that potentially could be a major difference maker, even before the power numbers start to go bananas, I think, when he's 25, 26, and he starts to add that man muscle.
A lot to unpack there. So I think for the first thing, I think there's a high chance he will break camp. I think if I'm the Orioles, you don't need Holliday to be incredible, because you have, like you said, Adley Rutschman, you got Gunnar Henderson, you've got a Grayson Rodriguez. You have a solid core where you're not reliant on this guy being your franchise guy, and so you don't need to handle him with kid gloves to make sure you don't blow his development path. If he was on, say, the Oakland Athletics, then you'd be scrutinizing every move to make sure you're doing it properly. So you bring him along at the ideal way. The Orioles, they don't need him to do well, so they can bring him up, they can bury him at the seventh in the batting order, and gradually bringing him higher in the order as he produces. You can kind of play him however you want, and there's no real downside, I feel. So I can definitely see him breaking camp. I don't have him in any dynasty league, so I regret saying that out loud. How he'll do? I think probably he'd be in the Wyatt Langford range for me, assuming Wyatt Langford's killing it in spring training in that scenario. I don't think he will go lower than that. So there's a high chance that I may not be able to draft Jackson Holliday, because I think I could easily see him going in, you know, top five rounds, top six rounds, someone who can do power and speed and a great lineup for the Orioles or in a winning team. He'll be very popular if it looks like he's going to break camp out of spring training. So I tend to be conservative. Like I just said, in all my other leagues, I don't really have any rookies. I will have to take a close look at the decision-making I had done up to this point to lead to that, to not having any rookies. But I just feel that there's going to be someone more aggressive than me for Jackson Holliday. Like I said, the Orioles don't really need him, so they may not bring him up. They may slow play him. They may have him weighed down in the order because they don't need him. And that may be something that I just can't, you know, use early round draft capital on. And so I may take more of a wait and see approach. And if he falls to me and then the eighth or ninth, then maybe I'd take him then. How about you? Would you take him early?
Yeah, I think I would get pretty aggressive with him, because I think the thing that he's going to provide, particularly like in points leagues, is I think like just the all around production in the lack of strikeouts. It's like Stephen Kwan is super valuable in my head-to-head points leagues. So he's not typically the kind of guy that I would draft in a 5x5 roto or like a 5x5 with OBP switched out for average. But when you get into those points formats, like guys like that strikeouts a little. And the thing with Holliday is he actually has some power and speed. So like I feel it, and he could play multiple positions in the infield. I mean, like he could be a guy, like we could sit here a year from now and be like, Jackson Holliday has second base, shortstop, third base eligibility, and hit, you know, 290 with, you know, a 385 OBP and, you know, 17 home runs and 32 stolen bases and like 100 runs scored. Like I feel like he is a guy, and across all formats it's going to be really valuable. But he's someone that I would be more aggressive on, more so than like Langford, who we just talked about, just because I think the well-roundedness of his game is really conducive to a variety of scoring formats, including like standard 5x5 roto still. Like I don't want to discount him there. I just think that he could be like a points league superstar. Like this could be, you know, a top five player or 500 point type of scorer in your standard CBS point scoring sort of format. So Holliday's a guy that I think, you know, he maybe doesn't have like the loudest power. And I think some people maybe downgrade him a little bit in their rankings if like they're more data driven. When you really look at it, the totality of his contributions are really, really valuable. And I think that's where he makes up the difference. And he's fast enough with enough power and the underlying plate skills that I think he'll hit the ground running, and he'll be really valuable. And by the middle of the summer might really, you know, start hitting on all cylinders. That's enough for my car analogies.
Yeah, I mean, I have no question in my mind that Jackson Holliday will be like a round one, round two perennially draft pick. I don't know if it's maybe next year that he'll be putting up numbers that approach that as a 20-year-old for the entire season. I'm a bit more conservative on what I expect his performance to be. I could see, you know, 15-15 with a 280 average. I could see that easily for him next year. And so that, you know, that type of performance is where I would be drafting him, obviously with the upside to be higher.
Yeah. I just think like his ability to fit into that leadoff role and like be there for 10 years, like, you know, like they need that. And I think that he's a piece that fits in very well to like what that offense needs to maybe even take like that next step, you know, because like with him and like you have Mullins hitting two, like whatever, Gunner, you know, Adley three, Gunner four, Santander, like you start going down that lineup and all of a sudden you're like, all right, like that really sets the table for a lot of good young players.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about a couple more promotions and, you know, sort of some general call-ups, general topic as well. We'll be right back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. That's why I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America. It allows me to do everything on one website. I get quality candidates. I can schedule them. I can interview them. I can screen them. I can send messages to them, all within Indeed. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, and we are back. We're still talking some more promotions here late in the season. We've seen a lot of that stuff moving up. I think as September call-ups happened, it kind of had a chain reaction, up the ladder of, you know, players getting moved up levels to fill in for players who were promoted up levels, et cetera, you know. It's a seesaw. Sebastian Walcott promoted to high A. There's certainly some swing and miss concerns with Walcott. But I think overall, when you consider, you know, age and all that sort of stuff, just a really exciting player, huge upside here. But there is obviously some hit tool risk as well. High A was a pretty big jump, but I think it kind of makes sense, I believe, because of like playoffs and stuff like that, good environment. So what are your thoughts on this jump for Walcott? It was a little bit unexpected, I think.
Yeah, I think it's aggressive. I think he did slow down at the previous levels. But I think you're right. I think it's like, keep giving him reps. Obviously, they think he's going to be a superstar. So they're being aggressive with him. Just looking at the data again, like I was, first thing I got, I looked at when I got the data was to take a look at, you know, some of the FYPD guys. So like Dylan Cruz, although, you know, Walcott did play at much lower levels. And so his aggregate, like in-zone whiff percentage, is kind of maybe artificially elevated by like Complex League, for example. His in-zone whiff percentage is better than Dylan Cruz. So I'm not trying to say that, you know, it's his swing and miss concerns are overstated, but, you know, it's not that bad in aggregate. So, I mean, he's 17, maybe he's 18 now, but this is his age 17 season. Like, this is... like when you took him in that first round or second round of that that mock prospect draft, like I don't think, I mean, it was aggressive, but I don't think you're looking foolish at all in any way. He is definitely going to be a superstar in the majors, I believe. I think he just has to work on the chase. He's young enough to do that. The fact he's in high A is just kind of blowing my mind.
If it wasn't for Ethan Sal, he is still 17. He's actually 17. He turned 17 in March, Dylan.
Oh, wow.
He has a March 14th birthday. So he's right in that range as like Churio, Painter, Yuri, Vlad Guerrero all have like March, early April birthdays. Because it's always like, I remember like as the new season starts is right as they turn a new age. So So he's not 18 until next March. So he's very 17. He's not supposed to be here.
No.
Ethan Salas was so out of this world, he wasn't supposed to be here. Same thing with Wolcott. Wolcott's not supposed to be here at this point. And even the complex, he was young. Even the Arizona Complex League, he was one of the youngest players there. So, like, I think when you start to put that all into perspective, the performance is like, all right, like, you know, much, much stronger. But I think the thing is with him is it's just the thing that jumps from the underlying numbers. He's got a 120. I don't know if the 120 max exit velocity is legitimate or not. It might be. He's got a 106 90th percentile, high barrel rate. The angles are good. He gets to the sweet spot. And as you said, the chase, the miss, all that sort of stuff, it's not really that bad.
No, not at all. And he's 17. His 90th percentile is 106, and he's 17. Like, even if that max 120 is a misread, like, they weren't wrong on the other 10% of his hits. So, like, he definitely generates incredible power. Like you said, the launch angles are good. The hard launch angles are good. The pull launch angles are good. Like, he's not pulling them into the ground or anything. So, like, he's got it all there. It's just a matter of, can he hit the secondaries consistently? Can he not chase? And how will he do against advanced pitching? And I mean, if you're only 17, you're going to probably do quite well.
Yeah, I'm really willing to get aggressive on guys like this. The same with Ethan Salas, who I think's probably done. I think they said he's done for the year. With a knee injury, was shut down on Saturday. So this probably ends his season, which is perfectly fine. I mean, he is a year for the ages, just in terms of what he's accomplished this year at the age that he was, the levels he was assigned to, getting into a major league game in spring training kind of foreshadowed all that we would see from him. But just a really impressive year. I think the bat is worlds better than we had even expected when he had signed less than a year ago. This guy has been a professional. As an international player, he's been a professional for less than a year and has already made his way up to AA, which is just remarkable. That's the only kind of thing you'd see from a 23, 24-year-old Cuban player or something, you know, not someone you expect from a 16, 17-year-old. So I don't think there's anything else we have to add there really on Salas. Another topic I want to bring up to you, because this guy has taken such a massive step forward this year. And I think this trade, when it happened, kind of went under the radar. But Cole Reagans to the Royals, Reagans is looking like a potential ace and a guy that you would take within the top 15 pitchers, starting pitchers off the board next year. Like, that's how he's looked. I don't know if he's going to be that, but I think this is somebody I'm all in on. I watched the last two starts, and I think there was a stat I sent over to you or something, like he's the first Royals pitcher in history or something to take two starts, consecutive starts into the fifth inning with a perfect game, or into the sixth inning with a perfect game, or was fifth inning with a perfect game. So it just goes to show, I mean, he's been dominant, and he's really interesting because I believe he has starting pitcher, relief pitcher eligibility and will hold that into next season, which in a lot of points leagues, once again, really big difference maker. And I love the flexibility. I love roster flexibility. You know, Jeff Ponce on my tombstone, right? Love roster flexibility in fantasy baseball. So what do you think about Reagans? I don't know if you've dug in at all. I have one share.
I have no Cole Reagans anywhere. He popped on the radar when he was throwing 99 or whatever. I think still on the Rangers as a relief pitcher this year. He went to the Royals in that Aroldis trade, did really well in the first start then, just before the FAB period where we could get him in like NFBC formats. His start, his velo was actually down and slightly. And so I was worried and trigger shy from seeing that with Matthew Liberatore. Chris Bubich has scarred me as well. And so I lowered my bids, and so I don't have him. So I have missed out on Cole Reagans. I have an in-season spreadsheet where I kind of track pitchers to help me make my decisions. And I have him as the third best pitcher rest of season now. Freddie Peralta, Spencer Strider, then Cole Reagans. Brandon Woodruff, just to peek behind the curtain at what my spreadsheet says. So, I mean, he's going to be.
Who are the top three?
Freddie Peralta, Spencer Strider, and Cole Reagans.
That was my best call of the offseason. I should have gotten more Freddie Peralta because I was all over him. I was pounding the table. He was my underrated guy, and he's been great, but I didn't draft him enough.
Yeah, so I mean, going into, like, I've seen debates of, like, who do you want in Dynasty, Grayson Rodriguez or Cole Reagans? I've seen, like, how high is he going to be picked in redraft? Like you just said, top 15. I don't, it's everything is there. I get it. One thing I want to say is his last three opponents have not been the greatest. I think it's like White Sox, Pirates. Can't remember the other one, but it's like their WRC plus on the year are like 86, 86 and 81 from what I remember. So he's had a bit of a, he hasn't had the toughest competition. So that's just one thing to say. Obviously, what he's doing is incredible. I do like him. I'm a bit worried that, I don't know if he's a top 10 pitcher for 2024. Obviously, I'm the type of person who wants to see more of a track record before I make that type of, draft capital investment. But it's remarkable, and it's going to be fascinating. It's probably going to be the fascinating story going into 2024 drafts. And then, of course, there are going to be so many articles about who find the next Cole Reagans. Who's the 2025 Cole Reagans? 2024 Cole Reagans. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I totally understand the aggressiveness. People who have him, ride it out. This is incredible. Maybe he's the next Spencer Strider. I'm a bit conservative on that before I start, putting that moniker on him.
Let me throw another random topic out to you. I'm putting you on the spot with this one. Looking at the top five, we'll say it stays the same in FYPD. We'll remove any foreign-born professional players from this conversation for now. Okay. Who's your number six? I know we had Matt Shaw. I've heard some people throw a bunch of names out there. I've heard people throw out Kyle Teal. I've heard people throw out Cole Emerson, frankly, as the next guy up. So I want to ask you, who's sort of your number six right now? Is it any of those guys? Is there another player that maybe I didn't bring up, a Tommy Troy, someone like that? Maybe it's Nolan Schanuel. Maybe you like the certainty of Schanuel and the overall plate skills, and the lack of power doesn't concern you as much because you feel you're going to make it up in other places and get immediate returns, and that maybe the power begins to come by the time these other guys are ready for the major leagues. Is it, I guess, like, I'm kind of interested, like, where are you going right now? Where is your heart? Is there a guy that you have in your head after five? I know it's Shaw for me. I've made that point a few times in recent podcasts, but wasn't sure if you had one.
I think it's Shaw. I do think it's Shaw. He's sort of like the highest after the top five in RoboScout. I'll have to take a deeper look at the underlying StatCast stuff, but I do think it's Matt Shaw. I thought your question was going to be, if Cole Reagans was available in NFYPD, where would you take him in the top five?
Take him one.
Would you take him one?
I don't shy away from doing stuff like that. And I think, like, the thing with Reagans for me is I feel like he was a highly touted pitching prospect at one point. He got draft capital, etc. I almost feel like with Reagans that this is like the perfect time. Like, you get this guy after he's gone through everything else. He's kind of materialized. He kind of looks like, the fully formed, like he's out of the oven at the right time. It's the right cake. It's the right recipe. It's the right mix. Everything's there. You finally nail the recipe, and it takes a while. And then it's like, all right, give me two or three good years, versus Skeens, who's been shut down. They're working on some pitch development with him. I think, like, with Cruz and Langford, as much as I like those guys and they could contribute next year, we could be talking about a guy that's taking that next step forward. And it's often a pitcher like this that does this. It, like, hitting is much easier to predict. I feel the prospects that are good hitters in the minors that produce, the high-end hitters, you look at our top of our lists of recent years, the high-end hitters those guys turn out to be pretty high-end players almost universally. There's very few busts with the hitter side of things. You know, Kelnick is really the only one that sticks in my brain, and at least recent years. And then you look at pitchers, and it's such a crapshoot. You know, there's so much that can go wrong. Andrew Painter looked like a shoo-in, and it's like he's down for probably 2 years. You know, we're not going to see Andrew Painter until 2025. You know, and it's like, all right, like this could still happen. There's so much uncertainty until they're up and performing. And even when they're up, you sometimes got to do the Grayson Rodriguez thing and get your teeth kicked in for, you know, 10 starts or 8 starts or whatever it is, and then go back down, make an adjustment, and then figure it out. That happened to Jose Berrios too. So I feel like you're kind of through the weeds. This is like the right time to be buying in on this guy. And I think that the market doesn't quite ever know how to price these guys when it's a second half breakout going into the offseason. Look at Justin Steele. I think Reagan's stuff is way better than Justin Steele's, but Justin Steele in my 30-team dynasty league, I did the calculations because the playoffs started this Monday. Justin Steele's our Cy Young winner. He is the top earning pitcher in my 30-team roto league. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was going to be Strider, whatever, here we go. And it's Justin Steele. So I think that goes to show you that, like, sometimes, like, the market didn't know how to price Steele. I think Steele was a little bit harder to buy into because the stuff wasn't crazy, even if he was a lefty, et cetera, et cetera. Reagan's going to be easier to buy into. I still don't think the market's going to price him correctly in that you're still going to buy him now, pay a hefty price, and then by August the next year, it's going to look like a steal because he could be a top 10 pitcher. I think he can take that step, maybe top 5. I mean, as you said, he's already performing like one right now. So it's just a matter of health. You know, I don't care where they are. We've seen great pitchers on bad teams before.
Yeah, I'm everything you're saying completely makes complete sense. Like, I missed out on Shane McClanahan because, again, I was kind of like skeptical. And
yeah,
I know now that he had the Tommy John, maybe, you know, it's he's not a great example of being able to get in on the ground floor. But that's the type of person that, you know, I'm skeptical on. And then they end up being like the top dynasty pitcher in the league or whatever. I was slow on Spencer Strider, Zach Gallen, even though, you know, RoboScout was saying Zach Gallen was incredible that year, dominating in AAA. I can't remember the year, but, you know, I'm like, I don't know, like his pedigree isn't so great. You know, I want to see more. And of course you miss out on it. So, you know, you may be 100% correct that this is the time. This is the only window you're going to have for Cole Reagans for the next 4 or 5 years. But I can't trade like a Corbin Burns for him or a Grayson Rodriguez even, or Aaron Nola. I would not trade for Cole Reagans in a dynasty league. So I'm skeptical. I hope he does really well, and I'm sure I will look foolish as I often do. But it's difficult for me to take the huge plunge on that.
Yeah, for sure. You know what? I was going to throw out one last thing with like best September call-ups. I don't know if you have any names that come to mind. We don't have to spend a whole lot of time on this as we've already gone 40 minutes. But yeah, I don't know if you have any of these players that have been called up over the last week or two that you're keeping an eye on, streaming, maybe made some waiver claims on, and have some excitement about. Maybe Jason Dominguez.
Jason Dominguez, I missed out on an FBC. Ronnie Mauricio, who I like just as much as Dominguez, probably I also missed out on. I think someone who could come up still, Jordan Lawler, I think we're waiting on. Maybe Pete Crow Armstrong. Kyle Manzardo might even come up. All three of those could come up. I'm not sure if they will. I'm not holding out hope that they will. I probably want to see Jordan Lawler come up. I'm not really sure why the Diamondbacks are waiting. I mean, they're fighting for that wild card, and I think, you know, get Jordan Lawler up and maybe move Perdomo to third or something. I don't know. I can't imagine why they wouldn't call him up, try to get the best team on the field, best lineup on the field, especially in the playoff hunt. But
yeah,
I think he's probably the one that I'm most curious about.
Not bad. I wanted to ask myself. I haven't I haven't ventured or waded into those waters too much. My competitive teams right now are like a 12-team head-to-head where I have limited moves, a 30-team league where I'm in the head-to-head playoffs. We've played Roto for the entire season, and in September we do a 12-team, like, you know, sort of modeled after MLB playoff setup. So that's a lot of fun. And my streaming, like my one team is like a 12-team daily moves, and I'm streaming, like, I have a lot of hitters, and there's just so many guys that are established major leaguers that are available on that wire that it's just, I'm not typically going to the young, hot, you know, startup guy yet. So we'll see. But still a few weeks left. We'll see what happens. Could be some more call-ups that happen too, especially as the playoffs end. Maybe some guys getting some late season games, a start here or there. Should be exciting. But Dylan, thanks for joining me. Everyone out there, thanks for tuning in. I'm Jeff Ponce. This has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.